WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City, and in Rockland County, we're at 91.9 FM. And all over the world, you can hear us online at WFMU.org. I am and continue to be Jim the Poet. Fabio will be back next week. Hardy White is up next. Those are some of the happiest words in all of FM radio. Hardy White is next. We were listening to Jörg Frey. It's a song called Je les ai et la nuit sans points d'ombre. That's not pronounced correctly, but it was really wonderful, very nice long piece. Took up most of this hour. Thank you to all of you for sticking around and for listening to WFMU. You know, the holidays are coming up. There'll be lots of great people at different times during this next couple of weeks, so please stay tuned and be aware of what's happening upcoming and for fill-ins. Lots of new DJs, lots of people returning to the area and available to DJ, and I hope you'll enjoy all of those programs. I'm off this week, so you can listen to Showy McShowface at another time, probably soon, possibly after this show, who knows? It's hard to say, but I'll see you soon on the radio, and please enjoy Hardy White, one of the real treasures of WFMU. And stay tuned with us as long as you possibly can. Hold tight to this station, as you will. Thanks, and goodbye.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. I'm not going to lie to you. The way I get the show to be exactly 1 hour is sometimes when I go over, I just abruptly cut off the intro so that... Well, hello, my friends. There's an old saying. It's those who can, do, and those who can't, don't, and those who can but others don't want them to, teach. And I have always wanted to be a teacher, not because of the power thing. I don't want control over everybody. I don't want to just, wait a minute, are you not paying attention? That's it. Take out a pencil. I don't want that part. Pop quiz. I don't want to traumatize people or be in some kind of power situation, but I do have this urge to share. And that urge is so strong that I subject strangers to it in sort of public travel situations. So I don't want to do that, really. I don't want to be a bus teacher, which is what I call people that won't shut up on public transport. So I'm so blessed for your lesson, oh, spontaneous teacher. And one of the reasons that I'm not resisting it is because I just assume, because I've been brainwashed by art, that you are an angel in disguise or something. I just assume everybody who's given me some kind of grief is just Jesus being tricky or something. I'm Gabriel, but I'm pretending I'm not. I saw a recent movie where Keanu Reeves was an angel. I didn't see the movie. That's all I saw. It was sort of a warning. Sometimes those previews are like labels that say with a skull and crossbones on it or something to say if you're lactose intolerant, do not watch this film. So I was thinking the other day, what can I teach? What do I know? You know, you start looking around and thinking, I must have acquired some sort of skills over the years, you know, even if you've just done the same thing, even if you've been an owner of, say, a Samsung washing machine for years, you go, you know, I feel pretty versed in this particular model. You know, you feel comfortable with it. You've had to repair it, and you've accumulated some experience. So my friends, you might think, oh, I don't know anything. But you look and you say, I do. I could teach, and I could charge exorbitant costs. You know, because if I underpriced it, people go, well, why would I? Who cares? But if you say, I'm one lesson, I don't want to price myself out of it. One lesson, $1,200. That sounds good for an hour. That's not crazy. Is it crazy? I haven't decided what I'm going to teach yet, but I feel like that's the little sweet spot price there for the kind of clientele that I would like. I say some people use the word student. I think clientele sounds fancier. So anyway, I would like to teach, and I was looking into my past. And I said, what is back there? What did I learn? Because I went to school. Sometimes I pretend like I didn't. But I went to school. I just didn't do very well. And, you know, my friend John was going to see, gets a degree or something like that. And he's right. So you don't have to be good at something. And I did go to school, and I must have learned something because I did not fall asleep in every class. And I know that there were some that interested me, especially if the teacher had some sort of, like, strange facial configuration or verbal tic. But often it was the information that was being conveyed, and my youthful imagination was ignited and then burned up completely by the time I became an adult. So I keep looking for its ashes, and I go through, I go, there must be something in here, a reminder of the inspiration I felt. Looking into my past, I then realized, oh my goodness, I have an advanced degree in poetry, and I had totally forgotten about it. You know how you put something in a drawer, and they go, what the heck? And you say, well, Hardy, you don't share that very often with people. Well, some things you keep to yourself, like, I've got this condition where I produce acrid stools, the color of burnt orange or something. You wouldn't go around saying that to people. Say, oh, thank you. That's oversharing. Well, I believe that if you go around saying, I have an arts degree from a state school, that's like describing your bowel movements to someone or worse. And say, you should see this abscess on my, but what's that area in between your genitals and your anus? And then you say, oh, no, that's too much. Well, that's how I feel about my poetry degree. I'm not really, I often think about how did it affect my life? And, well, the biggest one was helping me wake up and realize, oh, dear, you know, everything I believe is wrong. And that's a wonderful, I haven't really gotten past that. It's like being introduced to a wonderful jungle, and you say, the whole jungle, venture forth into the jungle. It's yours to conquer. And you say, well, I'm pretty sure the jungle's going to eat me. Some kind of vampire monkey is going to swing down upon me, seize me by the throat, maybe in the first couple meters. Say, that is very possible, but more than likely, some tiny bug is going to crawl up in your toenail and terrorize you slowly over time. By first colonizing your foot. I say, oh, I don't know if I, is this is academia you're describing? Well, no, it's just the world. When it opens up to you and you realize, oh my goodness, you know, maybe jungles aren't all Swiss Family Robinson. Who is that? We don't all, we're not all 80. I'm not 80. And I would like to remind you that a lot of movies, they continue to show. You know, you say, well, I don't know the Flintstones because I'm not 88. I said, well, listen, I mean, they, you know, you don't have to be older to have appreciated the Flintstones. No one appreciated the Flintstones. Let's just make that clear. I'm just trying to say that a lot of the art, you can be influenced by art from a very long time ago. And that's what I'd like to discuss. So when I thought, well, I'm going to teach about poetry maybe. I don't know much, and I don't know it in order, but I will just, it is like regurgitate is a hard word not to use. And the reason is because you know how when you come upon a table and the food is beautifully laid out and organized and orderly, and then you ingest it and you put it down there, and then if it comes back out of you, it's all jumbled up, but it's the same food. So if you went through it, you could conceivably put it back together. Vomit is a lot like what happens in a black hole. You say all information is retained, yes, but it's retained as a sort of in quantum puke. And so these are all going in my TED Talk. You can see why it was poetry and not anything else. They require you. They know when they accept you. They go, you know, what are we accepting you for? And they go, well, I will be studying poetry at your institution. And say, well, you should probably take some other courses and things. Well, for instance, well, maybe meteorology. Why is that? Well, you know, let's say you're a poet and you go, I'm going to go out and write some poetry today. And then there's a cumulonimbus. There's a damn cumulostratovarius nimbus out there. And you could perish because you didn't know that the weather was bad. You went out to do, I'm just going to do a sestina in this golf course. Boom, struck dead by lightning. Lightning, I just like to, you know, lightning is not inherently fascist. It's the representation of lightning. Just like the heart is not heart-shaped, lightning is not really truly that shape of that lightning bolt. That's something else, okay? So let's just get that straight. These are all things I learned, not in poetry, but poetry is a lot like any hobby. Well, just there's tangentially, you go out, there's things that you need to learn or you become expert at as you're learning the core things. So let's say you're fly fishing, which my nephew does, fly fishing. Well, you learn to fly tie flies and everything like that. So you have to learn about other things like, what do I do? What if I do this hook goes really deeply into my finger? So then you learn a little bit of medicine and things like that. And it's just about how I do. When I began school to study poetry and become a poet, I wanted to become a poet with a big P. And because you can be a little tiny P poet. And anybody can do that. And you are that when you write your mom a greeting card and you go, you're the best mom that ever was. I think that's from the things you does. I'm glad that you are not with the fuzz. I'm sorry, I'm from the 60s. It doesn't have to, the whole thing doesn't have to rhyme. So, but that makes you a poet, small pee-pee poet. And then I wanted to be like, oh, maybe I'll be a professional poet and get some imprimatur. And where you get imprimatur nowadays, but a university, which will give you something. Now, I should have learned this from Wizard of Oz, is that here's a certificate that says you're brave. You know, well, no, that's not how it works. So, and I believe that's way, with knowledge to a certain extent. Now, I would like my doctor to have a certificate, but I don't really need my poet or novelist to have, you know, but I have this, it says I'm, it says very clearly, I'm a writer. That is something that the proof of the pudding is in, rubbing the pudding on somebody and them going, ooh, nice pudding. That's how you evaluate your work. And so let us now journey into, I believe that poetry is therapeutic for you. Now, it's probably been taught to you incorrectly, and it was taught to me incorrectly, I think. And maybe I'm going to open your world up a little bit because there's a very, like all arts, we have this idea that perhaps everyone in the arts is a free thinker or that they're open to new ideas or that arts are about exploring truths and not, you know, just recreating. It's not, you know, poetry shouldn't be Rush Hour 4 or whatever. And so, the car one. So you don't want to do, you know, Coleridge, Tokyo Drift, or something like that. You think, well, there's going to be all innovation. Well, this is not necessarily the case. So y'all go to art school and you go, things are very conventional. You know, I'm all for learning. I know I would like to learn to paint like the masters, and then I'm going to do my thing, see what happens. Well, whoops, that's where it goes wrong sometimes. All art, to learn art, it's imitative. And then you got to go and do something else. And people are reluctant to do that because there lies failure dragons. And they're abundant. And if you're doing it right, you should fail most of the time. Think about it. If you're really just exploring, so I'm just explore, and you find you're exploring, and every time you go out, you find gold, then it was planted. Because you shouldn't. Exploring should be 90% coming up with just dirt in your pan. And so that's how you know if people get very, very nervous. Then so they go and they learn arts and they tell me how to make the art that people are going to like before I even make it. And then you might go into the movie business. It's even worse than that. I mean, can you imagine, Wally? pitching somebody an idea and they have to be convinced that it's going to be successful and people like it before you even do it? No, tell me more. Oh, my God. I know, it's crazy, right? But that's the way it is with the arts, too. And if you're in school, oh, my goodness, it's even worse than that because you know you've got to please. The teacher's got to give you an A. And I don't want to sound like these whining people like I'm smarter than a teacher. It's not that at all. It's not that at all. I want someone who's an expert to evaluate my work. And then I want them to watch me fall. And that's the part that maybe doesn't happen. So I, Hardy, here am here to be your poetry professor. To show you how to fail, and because all the beauty is in that. The beauty is in the cracks. They don't allow you the wobby poetry. Now you say, well, bad poetry can be so cringe. Well, that's because that's the end of the spectrum of lack of self-awareness. If you think that you're going to write something fully just going to draw, I just have this in me and it's beautiful. If you think it's, you know, if you don't have mixed feelings about it, you're probably self-deluded. It's a wide world. You know very little of it. And as young people, we believe that our first success at imitation means, oh, here we go. I'm an original thinker or something. And they go, no, you're just a really good impressionist. And I worry, you know, as we move into the world of AI, that it'll be all impressions, you know? There's sort of I believe there's almost a voice acting, and there was starting to be the equivalent of the dead internet, where there were just people doing impressions of certain celebrities, and then people would do impressions of that person doing it. And I do it. I do it on purpose, though, to show you how meta is. Not Meta, the corporation. Meta, James Garner's super agent. No, I just wanted to show you that... that we're living in an age of copy of a 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 copy. And see what happens? See how it degrades? So here we go, and we're going to move forth and talk about poetry and how to make it, and what is and what isn't poetry. And so we are now making ourselves the editor of a very exclusive magazine called the Quarterly Review of Quarters. Poetry Quarter Review of... Now, say, oh, I know poets aren't snobs and everything. I'm sure you do. And at no time am I really talking, criticizing people. Oh, yes, I am. But not individuals. All of us. The thing that I love most... The thing that gives me satisfaction as far as making poems is doing what I call Vulcan poetry. Now, what's Vulcan poetry? So on the TV series Star Trek, a lot of times they will have characters from other planets like Klingon and Vulcan. This is how you actually say them. And Romulan. And they will have their own languages, and a lot of times they will have, the producers will have linguists come on. They even did this for Land of the Lost. Chocolat, sadakala, chaka. He's like, they made up a real language for this, the little chaka character. Can you imagine getting a job like that? You got to put that on, we're going to put all this makeup on. Now say your lines.
Chaka atakala.
No, it's chaka atakila. It's past participle. And you're like saying nonsense and they're correcting your grammar. So I don't know. I don't know if that's really necessary, but I'm sure somebody's sitting there and like, wait a minute, that language sounds different. But really, it's just a vibe, right? You know? And sometimes I'll just try to speak in Vulcan or Klingon and do a poem. And, what's a very important occasionally to just say like Spock. So everybody gets, so here, I'll give you an example. Here's a Vulcan poem. Atala se te komatang pelecham to shefer to lean te kip papadakwal fesher portendalfe. So Spach met him, Balele, Vous pilez de mon tape. Des mac botac bot inidif. So cor, bolem de dev. Chopez patek and den bolep, os mach and den olep. Sont enterprise, borindo hoch. Orichlech, klingon frech. Choben de te calem da dachan on radi de vinch. A le pour se for frantes.
Borondo. What a flin.
Berlin dort hechnen und sprachen bleve flörn. Alle pochal ephemera. In Pimperlin and Wern.
Thank you. That was from my latest book, my latest chapbook, which is in the shape of chaps, which I'm wearing right now. If you'd like to buy my chap-shaped chapbook. And it will it chap you? Yes. You're going to, so I also sell my salve. And I believe that poetry is a sort of salve. For the soul? No. For areas that are dry and flaky. And that could be anywhere. Are you dry and flaky? Poetry's for you. And I really believe that. So I like some of the classic poetry. When I got to school, I had only been exposed mainly to, let's say, Longfellow. Or on a good day, Robert Frost. Yes, whose woods these are. And it had an impression on me, because you know I did wood furniture. I did Robert Frost doing a commercial for a furniture store. But those the kind of things, you know, this is like the skeleton in armor. That's a good poem. You should read that, have that read at your funeral. And have like a buddy read it in tears. It's always good to have something planned for your funeral, to like really cringy, to see if people can get through it sobbing. And while that seems like a cruel joke, well, we're all going to perish. And I have always secretly dealt with grief by internally mocking it. My own grief, not others, you know. But it really helped. Twin Peaks helped when Leland jumped on the casket and everybody made fun of him for that. That was so freeing. And now David Lynch is gone and I can't wait to see him in heaven. We're all going to heaven. No, I don't know. I'm there right now. My goodness. So was there really heaven? I'm closing my eyes. I'm sitting on a cloud with David Lynch. And he's being very polite, and he's nodding, but he refuses to speak to me. Because he doesn't know me. I mean, heaven's like that. Everybody thinks they know everybody. Right? You go up to people, oh, I've seen all your films.
Thank you. I'm very busy.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Laurie.
You know, I've been here for a while. A lot of people have seen him. They're just now forgetting me, so, you know, apologies.
That must be something, too. You get to heaven, you're swamped. The first, you get there initially, very popular. Then, just people start showing up who have never heard of you, you know? And they're still bothering people like Lincoln and all.
You know, I still get people visited. It's no fun sometimes being Lincoln in heaven.
That's my Lincoln voice used to be higher. I've adjusted it.
He's just a little happening and looking across the floor, like I'd say. I had Lincoln doing this.
And I still believe that's the way he spoke, because there was an account of him speaking at Cooper Union in New York. He came up there to speak. I believe my friend Dr. Topper had invited him up. And he said, come speak to the chemistry department, Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said, I don't know, you know,
I don't know if I'd be good for that.
And, but it was historic. But people said, oh my goodness, his voice is crazy, crazy voice. Crazy voice. Does not sound like National Guard ad where he offers to wrestle the other guy for leadership position. And then that was passed down. That's how we know what happened. Did he read poetry? Perhaps he read this one. Everyone knows this. Four score and many years ago. I don't have my abacus, so I don't know. Four score. A score is what, 20? Four score, 80? fourscore, and I don't know when he gave the speech. I don't know, man. I can't remember. I don't know what he was talking about. But anyway, he said, and many years ago, our forefathers bought under this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. It is with these words that I say unto you that this day unto forth will recall that I have spread my hand thusly over the entire nation, that we should come together as one people, united here in justice under the tree of liberty that sheds its leaves unto the feet of the village smithy, who in this case represents liberty, pounding out on his anvil, pounding out the sounds of justice, pounding out with the hammer of intrepid constability that you most forefront and signs this fourth day. Clap, 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 clap. Everyone loves poetry. And I guess my point is that a lot of times it is the sound and not the content of what is being said that matters. And I have seen this, I have seen thin, very thin content or very sentimental content disguised and wonderful by artful language. Now, this is a boring, realistic painting. So someone can paint really well, and you go, ah, your skills are great. What you've chosen to paint is unimaginative. The composition, it does nothing for me. You know, that happens. So you can do that with a poem or something. Say, I recognize that that is in the shape of something profound, but what you're saying perhaps is not. You know, hands... Mother's hands are like two branches offered down from a tree, a flesh tree. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever written that. That's pretty good, though. Go ahead, flesh tree. And I played in flesh tree for, oh, God, 7 years. And then Larry died. And so we, you know, that was it. That was the end of the act. He was flesh tree, is what I always thought. The word poetry is like the word, I can't think of something else that's maybe parent, some word that if you say it a lot, it doesn't make any sense anymore. And it starts losing its meaning. And then you think maybe it never had any meaning to begin with. And you still might believe, oh, do poems rhyme? Well, only the good ones. What do you mean by that? No, not necessarily rhyme. Here's why it's fun to have a form to write in. Because a lot of times if things are formless, it's really tough to sort of figure out what's going on. And communication can be very sporadic, random, and we know the difference between noise and music unless we go to see a noise band. And then you think, well, still... I'm pretty sure that there's nothing completely random about it because he brought his modular synths or something. So, you know, there's something here. Oh, that's not really noise. Well, he's got pedals. So it wasn't really just, you know, it isn't. We didn't just show up at a laundromat and go, yeah, man, the machines are making great noise. That's true noise, random. But, well, is that poetry? Is this poetry? Is this what I'm doing now, is it? So I was just speaking to you like this. Is it poetry? If you're reading a book, is that same? No, he said. It's not poetry if there's speech tags, he said. She looked at her hands. But some things have speech tags that aren't fiction. She looked into his eyes. He knew the look. Oh, he said, I'm using speech tags. Yes, she said. We both are. Oh, good. Oh, 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 oh. Where's it going? Oh, my goodness. So what am I listening to? Is it just the rhythm? Is it just the music? Do the things matter? It's all beat. It's all melody. It's all lyrics. And it comes together and it's a song. Now, any one of those alone, is that still music? Yes. So those elements of poetry, the content, the rhythm, all that. Are those alone? Are they all still poetry when they're by themselves? Are just words in the wild? Say, oh, this is a found poem.
Anytime things come together and they elicit some sort of surprise, that they're not utilitarian, that the language seems to have some arrow pointing beyond itself, beyond just the information conveyed by ordinary language, like, watch out for the toast, or, you know, duck, there's soup. Well, if it was in a can, is it a can of soup? There's soup coming towards your head. Well, wait a minute. Is it a can of soup or just soup? Is it a spray? Has someone put soup in it, like consomme in an atomizer and then just spraying it on my head? Because that's not going to bink. That was a little play. That was not, that was theater. So what's the difference then? As for my short, short story called The Type of Soup Matters. And it really does. And the container that the soup is in. And I feel that way about my show. When Hardy White shows up, and, well, when you're describing it to other people, you say, well, what does Hardy do? A lot of times, radio talker is one, which is highly accurate. Another thing, another way I'm described is as being on the radio, or FMU radio personality, or some they'll say DJ. And I don't know. There hasn't been a lot of discs or jockeying involved in the business in a long time. And it's so funny. They're calling a disc jockeying before compact discs. How'd they know? Who was calling records discs? Hey, did you get that new jazz disc? Oh, you mean my new jazz side? Yeah, the new disc? You mean my new joint? Yeah. You mean my platter? You mean my vinyl? My new LP? Yeah, your disc. Your record disc. That you can jockey with it now. Again, I don't know how that happened. And I don't know. I think it's like, I thought that was from the 90s when people used to steal compact discs and put them down their underwear. Because I had friends who worked in record stores and people were always doing that. And one time, my friend, had a bunch of friends working in the same independent record store, and sometimes they'd get shoplifters, and one of the times they locked them in the back room, which I'm not sure if you're allowed to do that. That might be imprisoning somebody. And the person crawled up through the ceiling. That's so great. Like it's some old adventure movie. Dang old Bruce Willis up there going through the, I'm getting out of here. Crawled up through the ceiling. Now, the ceiling was that sort of acoustic tile drop ceiling. So I don't know how far it got. I think he might have plummeted right down into the store proper and impaled on a discount bin of disco. But disco out bin. I'd buy a lot. I'd buy that up. Boy, if somebody was selling disco albums by the lot, or by the pound.
We have 500 pounds of disco albums.
I'd get them because they're good. People used to, when people disparage entire genres, you know something's up. That's not right. All music can be beautiful if it's all cut up and reappropriated. And I think that's valid. Now I don't go around do it. I have respect for actual poets, people that can put down words and the words convey something and people are moved by them and it's not just the content but the rhythm. I remember hearing somebody read, it was just a recording of somebody reading in Psalm 150 and in Hebrew. And so I don't know how to do it in Hebrew, so I'll do it in Klingon. But just to emphasize that there's a rhythm to it, because it goes like this. It goes like, Hallelujah, Akbar Spak. Hallelujah, Mira Spak. Hallelujah, Ohoro Sulu Spak. Like that. So the Hallelujah part, which is like praise, that repeats every line, and that's a wonderful thing that poetry does sometimes. We can repeat something, we repeat it, and it sounds more like poetry. So when you're, for instance, if you were to do a sort of a My Dinner with Andre rhythm,
you'd really want to embrace the fact that sometimes you repeat things. You know, you repeat them for emphasis, or you repeat them so someone remembers. Or more often than not, it's a way of hypnotizing them. Now, lately I have been listening to something that I think must be very, very distressing for the people that are in the videos, and that is physicists doing ASMR videos. I think it's I'm not going to say the channels or anything, but there are lectures up there by just people talking about the, can you imagine the vast, then space expands, and then as the contents cool and the elements form the quantum parts, as the quantum parts of it. And that's what it is, and it's this person's life work reduced to, and I know that Bob Ross knew that before he died. He was like, I'm not, people aren't really learning to paint, are they? They're just, maybe they're just listening to it because they can't afford sedatives or something like that, and they just need that. The, yeah, just go on. I'd love, I wish they'd still have public access. I'd just go on and make, I'd call it Hardy White's Noises from the Womb. And it would just be to sleep, and you'd be like you were in utero. And we'd do that as a joke. We would play Heart-Shaped Box by Nirvana, but the way that a fetus would hear it. We're all ready. That is a Mel Brooks joke from back, I forget, it was like the talking baby or something, saying, I remember my father, I was in the womb, and I heard my father going, we're all ready, like that. So I stole that part, thinking that everything when you were in utero, well, do you hear anything? Well, people guess they think babies do because there's all these things in movies where, not in real life, where they're putting speakers or headphones on a woman's pregnant belly, and so now the fetus is here, and they gotta like the Ramones, or we won't like the baby. And so they're playing music through, or people thought, well, if you put Mozart up your privates or something, so that the baby can hear it, it'll come out a genius. And it, oh, it was terribly cramped in there. I've pooed my bed. It'll come out like Mozart or something, and it immediately being precocious. Who wants your baby to be Mozart? Say, hey, how about your baby? What about this? Listen to these tapes, and your baby will die in their early 30s, but their face will be on chocolate for hundreds of years. So I don't know about that. I think I'd like my baby to live long and have, I'm just going to let the baby hear whatever it wants to hear in there. And then when it comes out, it's just going to be a citizen and hear anything, everything it wants to hear. It will not change. But the whooshing swoosh of the circulating blood, you know, that is calming to us. So I remember those carefree days of just floating in a fluid, amniotic fluid sac. And I didn't know where I was. And I have no recollection of it. Someone was saying that the other day, saying, oh, it was in a movie, saying people have no memory of when they're born or when they die. And I was thinking there's always one smart ass going, I remember when I was born. And you can't, what are you supposed to say? Okay, I bet you do. I do. I remember every detail. Okay. I don't know what to say. I remember also when I died. But okay, everybody's going to contradict you. There can't be any universal truth, right? Exactly. There's always going to be somebody to say the opposite. Isn't that lovely? You should probably think about that when you book shows. Say, how can we, instead of getting an opening act that complements the headliner, let's get something that where they'll contradict one another. And so, I guess, is there a band called Well Actually? Because that would be great if there was, you know, a band that came out and then another band that said, you know, now we're going to refute everything that was discussed earlier. And so here's our song, No, That's Not Quite Right, something like that. Now, the Beatles did that for a while. Oh, my gosh, after they broke up, they'd have, like, Paul McCartney came out with a song called John's a Real Pill, like that or something. They go back and forth like that. And him and his problems. And sometimes that's, you know, that's in art and that's in poetry too. Complainy, things like that. You know, the Psalms are interesting poems because there's imprecatory Psalms. What's that? Those are curses. Those are Psalms that are like, oh, Lord, strike down my enemies. And that's a beautiful kind of poem. We should maybe get children to practice that. Say, oh, you're writing a poem about how beautiful your kitty is and all that. We love that. Let's write a little poem about how, you know, you like the God to met out, or the universe, or whatever your beliefs are, to met out severe justice against somebody who's tormenting you or others. Some, perhaps there's some cruelty going on in the world, or murder or something, and you're like, please, Lord, you know, have their hands catch on fire, which is a lovely poem. There's no, I wish, hey, Hallmark, I don't know if you're still in the greeting card business. I feel like maybe it's redundant. We all have printers. Yes, but you can't get you can't get rhinestones on the outside of cards with doily stuff. That's right. You're right. So we've switched to that. Okay. But listen, this is what I was thinking. I go and there's so many types of cards for occasions, but there's no imprecatory ones. Isn't there ones? Well, gag shops have those. Well, what do you mean? Like Spencer's or something has the ones that say, I hope I hope something bleeds. I hope your nipples bleed because you have Ebola. Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. That's funny. Well, they're not meant to be. I think they're sick. There used to be an expression called sick humor. Do you remember that? It was in the 60s or something. Or 50s, maybe it started. I think I always think about Lenny Bruce saying, oh, he's sick. You know, if he'd talk about things that were, you know, transgressive, let's say. And that sick humor, a lot of the comic books that explored violence, pornography, was sick, it's sick. I think when you do that, really, you know, you misuse that word, and then where does it go from there? You think everything is a mental illness that's creative, and some of it is. Oh, my goodness, that's the thing. No one's saying it's all brilliant. I thought about that, about the Nazis in the Antarctica Kunst degenerate art exhibit. They go, oh, this modern art is terrible. They put it all up and you go, yeah, no, not, well, I mean, a couple things are, but not for the reasons you think. And also, you know, you're just so threatened by things that are different than other people having tastes or likes or interests that are different than yours. And it's a wonderful thing to explore because, you know, your interests and tastes and delights might be different than you think they are. And you've shut yourself off. Is there a key, is there a way of opening my heart and my mind and my eyes to different ideas? Perhaps I have limited myself. I wanted to feel that sense of accomplishment, that sense of knowing, you know, that I have finally arrived at the truth. But a more wonderful feeling is that original one that you had when you first got here, a sort of being back off your heels on your trundled on your chine a little bit. And I think that it's wonderful to get that back if you can. Why? I don't know. Because I am selling my recovery poetry. And I think it's just what you need. In times like these, is it not Hardy's verse that you need? Hi, I'm Hardy White. In times like these today, don't we need, in a way, someone with words is adept at conveying and communicating? I guess what I'm saying is I'm selling this, and I just want you to buy all these things that I have for sale. My chap book. Oh, my friends, I hope that you are now rushing out to get paper and pen. Before you do any poetry, you've got to get the equipment. And you know in any hobby it's like this. I'd love to start. I'm going to start right away writing poetry. Wait, 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 wait,
get all enthusiastic. You need to get the right pen. So, well, I'm just going to do it on the computer. Wait, wait. You want to do this right?
Yes.
Well, let's then do it right. We're not here. This isn't about typing anything. AI can do that. We're going to just, you're going to get a pen. You got to get the right pen. And it depends what kind of, like, now some of, let me tell you another aspect of writing poetry. So we talked about the sound, and we talked about the rhythm, the pitch, the meaning of the words and everything like that. But what we haven't talked about is something that if you ever become a samurai, you'll be like, wow, also calligraphy. There's also physically writing something is an element of it. And so that's why I recommend that you physically write down words with a pen or just start with one word and slowly become acclimated with being present and just writing a thing. Now, I was watching a slow movie the other day. It wasn't even that slow. It was Voyage to Italy? Journey to Italy? Voyage to Italy? It was Roberto Rossellini, Ingrid Bergman, and it's a swell film, but it's kind of slow. You know, when I was reading my Paul Schrader book, and it said, well, yes, this one is one of them where it's more about being there than getting there. Now, we've seen lots of movies that are like that. Say, so, hey, we're just going to be here now, and we just kind of dig the scenery. And you go, well, what happens next? You're so anxious to get to the end. For people who fear death, you're really, really wanting to get going. Can't we just sit here for a while? And B, you always want to, oh, you could get AI to write that poem. Yeah, now we're done. Now it's over. Is that what you want? I mean, you can have, everything can be done for that. You don't have to eat anymore. Press the button, you're full. So here's the thing. You write out in your sloppy hand. Now, my handwriting looks like I'm a child writing a ransom note so that I'm both insane and young and maybe writing with my non-dominant hand. That's what it looks like all the time. That's my proper handwriting. I said, but I've seen you draw. Haven't you noticed that my quaint off-kilter style of drawing? It's the same thing. So what you're reacting to is the gestalt, the wholeness to it. Something can be broken, but if it has sort of a completeness in its brokenness, you know, if it's faulty but one thing, you know, like an Ed Wood movie, which actually a movie, and that, you get a couple points just for that. And I believe that with any kind of art, so it can be evaluated for what it is. It's a beautiful whole thing, and it's now taken seriously. So get those ideas out. So, well, nobody seems to like it. Well, yeah, probably. Also, you know, maybe you're just writing down words on a paper. Maybe your poetry is something a little more concrete, like they say. What do you mean? Well, a lot of people like to work in cement or concrete when they do poetry. Well, isn't that sculpting or something? Well, not if you're mumbling to yourself while you do it. Not if you're speaking while you do it. Does it have to be words? I guess it does have to be words. It does have to be words. Well, try pouring concrete with others without using words. Right? You go, isn't screed, isn't that a thing? In both endeavors? What do you call it when you, what, you haven't laid any cement, no concrete in a long cement, have you?
I haven't. It's been a while. You know what I have never done? Is I've never tarmac atomed anything. I can't remember. There's fellas that go around and go, oh, hey, see you, I go, I'm sorry?
See you,
I go, I don't know what you're saying, man. Seal your driveway with tarmac atom. Oh, why couldn't you say that initially? But they've got, it's not really proper tar like they put down on a driveway, but it's a sealant. I don't even know what it is, really. I think you'd be better off getting a can of that stuff from the TV ads. That's like, you know, you make a boat out of this spray rubber. Might be that. I don't know. But then they'll say, oh, I got some left over. Okay. That's great. They also, what was the, what's his name? Oh, I should remember his name. He's a famous poet who lives, I think he's still alive. And the guy who wanted to do my driveway dropped his name. Wendell Berry, that's it. They go, oh, I did Wendell Berry's driveway. I go, man, I don't think so. But even though, that's a weird name to drop. Like, there's other famous people from Lexington.
Yahoo.
You could say, I did Richard Hell's driveway. I think he moved as a kid. Okay, hang on. I did, I don't know. I guess there isn't anybody famous from here. Yeah, there is. You know there is. But Jim, Jim didn't have a house here, I don't think. I did Jim Farley's parents' house. Okay, I believe you. I did Sybil. What? Sybil, the multiple personality lady?
Yeah.
She lived here, had a hat shop.
You're right.
I did her driveway.
Okay, well, I don't know. See, you're touting your driveway skills based on naming some random celebrities who lived here. And I really don't feel like that's enough evidence.
Well, here, I got some pictures.
All right, these are just Polaroids, and all I see is like black, purpley black.
That's the driveway. That's the job I did. Do you see any cracks in it?
I don't know. I feel that way when someone's asking me if something's a good poem or not. They say, well, this got published in here and that, and then here's this, that, and evidence. I go, well, I don't know, man. I don't know. Lay some on me right now. I'm going to go get a stout and then do your poetry reading. And let's see. Next time I go, I haven't been to a poetry reading in a while. I'm going to cross my damn arms next time I go. I'm going to sit there. I'll go, go, like that, see how they do. That's, if you've ever done, as a sometimes monologist, I understand the cross. I know that it's very comfortable to keep your arms that way. But from the stage, what I'm getting is, I don't even know, man. I don't know whether I'm supposed to strip. When you have your arms like that, it's so judgy. And I don't know, I'm not telling you what to do with them. Pockets would be weird. I want to give you instructions for being an audience. I like when people cup their hands around their mouth getting ready to boo or yell something and just stay like that the whole show. That might be fun. Try that. There's all sorts of options. Oh, I love you so much. You know I'm just kidding. I'm giving you some words today to play around with. I always see my job as threefold. And here it is. One of them is a sort of ASMR thing. But maybe not to fall asleep. I like to be both. You're taking a long car trip. You can put on the same tape to stay awake that you can to fall asleep. I almost, Noam Chomsky almost killed me one time because I was down. I thought, oh, I'll download lectures for this 10-hour car trip I got to do alone. Don't do that. Downtown, real, real poetry, like, Squeeze. I've been listening to a little Squeeze lately. There's some poetry in that. They have that kind of 80s poetry where you just describe some affair, He's looking down at us having an affair here, and she drops her stocking, and then I spill my coffee. And then we go out, and then he's there again. That kind of thing. That's lovely, though. I don't mind that. Oh, my gosh. The human heart can be moved in so many ways. I lived briefly in France and saw people living in apartments that were built, in the Middle Ages or something, when people didn't have spinet pianos. I said, well, how am I going to get that spinet piano up that impossibly small staircase? And the answer would be heave it up through the window or something. So I would regularly see that thing that you would encounter maybe when watching an old Laurel and Hardy movie or something and say, oh, they're lifting that piano up over a sidewalk. Why? Well, now I know because I lived in a place like that because you can't get it through the front door, so they're bringing it through the window. So they temporarily suspend the piano over the heads of unsuspecting pedestrians. I saw this actually done also in the Guggenheim. Where there's, they got that middle
You go around it in a spiral. Some but Peggy Guggenheim was drunk once. She goes, I'll put me in a museum. Like, and then somebody, you know, is like that. So it's kind of weird. I don't care for it because I like to be, I don't like to walk on a constant angle going anywhere, really. Unless I'm, it's like walking up a very gradual slide. And to me, the way it's arranged, because you feel like it feels like it's spiraling up or something. But anyway, so there was a piano hanging in the middle of this museum as a work of art, as a way to say, hey, how did it get up there? And you go, hey, I don't know. And you go, hey, cables, they lifted it? You go, hey, yeah. What's it make you feel? And you go, you know, nervous, mad, I don't know, frustrated. All these things I was out in New York City before I came in to the museum where I thought it was going to be a respite. No, I joke. These are all little jokes. I love museums. And I have never walked around New York City not feeling relaxed. Granted, I don't live there, but I'm always usually on vacation or visiting. But people go there and scared or really, I get scared for other people a little bit. I get on that subway and I go, oh man, I'm from the, I apologize ahead of time. Because I'm, you know, I'm part rural. So I don't know, you know, whether I'm doing things right or not. And I feel like there's this chance I could get us all killed because I don't know the drill, you know? So I'm not really scared of anybody. And so, oh, don't you have lunatics where you live? Yeah, only though, just. So I go to the city and go, man, people are just going where it's supposed to go and everything like that. Not like at home. No, it's fine here. I love people. My gosh, people are people wherever you go. There is good and bad in everyone. But some people really love the bad part and nurture it all together. Mercury and monetary. I forget what the song is, but it does have that line in it. And I think about that. You know, how people are a mixture of good and bad. Why? Because the society's idea of good and bad keeps changing. So they're probably only one thing, you know? I don't feel like I don't feel any duality in me. I feel like that's you, you know, looking for, well, what is it? What are you? Which is it? Wow. It's like, I don't know whoever's in charge invented like the check a box idea, because we live in such a check a box society. At least they have like an other or a none, but those check a box things are like, wow, projection city, you know, which one are you? You know, stupid or smart? Oh man, your worldview is really oppressive. And I can see why so many people are, you know, psychotic, because it's really difficult to do that. And perhaps through the world of poetry, we're seeing that we can combine things in so many ways, and that there's the permutations are endless if you stop using numbers and just use sounds or I don't know what I'm talking about. I guess what I'm saying is go forth, you fathead, as Gene Shepherd would say. Excelsior, you fathead. Just march right into their forest and bless you, and you will see beauty, and it's all mixed up with the horror, and the good smells and the bad smells exist all swirled up in one of those swirly things, like a new Ben & Jerry's flavor. There's the new Ben and Jerry's good and evil swirl, where they're both mixed together with nuts, of course. What type of nuts? That'll say a lot. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about nuts. Maybe, okay, what's the worst thing that you could put in ice cream? I've thought about it, and I think it's Lupino beans. So, there you go. What are they? I think they're actually like beans from a fern or something like that. But you get them in Europe, you know, and there's these weird kind of waxy. They're like a snack, and they have those like almost like soybeans or something. Lupino, I think I call them. And I'd ate a lot of them in France, and I was like, I don't know what these are, and I'm worried that it's not food where I'm from. And then I'm eating like Sega Palm things, and I'm gonna get it's gonna be like an Oliver Sacks book. With all these people, they ate a palm tree and they got Parkinson's or something. Am I misremembering it? It's been a while. Island of the Colorblind, as read by Oliver Sacks, the late Oliver Sacks, Socorro Vaca. Oh my goodness, I am blessed to be with you. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org, worldwide, the entire planet. Going down the freeform radio alley, and it's a dead end. But we love it in here, and we're just going to party until they shut off the other end of the alley, and we perish. And then we're skeletons encased in a sealed alley. And years from now, we'll be dug up like Richard III's skeleton. And they'll do some DNA on us. And they'll say, your daddy wasn't your daddy. And you'll say, oh, yay. I wish I'd known that when I was alive. Oh, bless you. I love you so much. Thank you for listening. I'll see you again next. Didn't it? 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 Didn't it?
Thank you.